by Jeremy Evans. You can download it as a podcast and sign up for the Music Matters newsletter if you so wish, and that's at the Radio 3 website.
On BBC Two, the historian Dominic Sambrook continues his examination of 1970s Britain.
For 200 years, Great Britain had been the world's dominant power. But by the mid-1970s, the winds of global change were gathering force.
A decade of shortages.
SOS. Switch off something right now.
And economic turmoil.
We are asking you to cut down the use of electricity in your home.
The 70s continues this Monday night at 9 on BBC Two.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. Just gone 1 o'clock, time for the news from Ian Skelly.
Armoured cars and police are lining the streets of Bahrain's capital, Manama, in anticipation of further anti-government protests before tomorrow's controversial Formula One Grand Prix. As practice and qualifying sessions were taking place this morning, opposition activists said a protester who took part in the demonstrations yesterday had been found dead. The Crown Prince of Bahrain said cancelling the race would only empower extremists. The Chancellor, George Osborne, has been criticised by his own backbenchers for agreeing to lend another £10 billion to the International Monetary Fund. Mr Osborne insisted the broad body of Conservative opinion understood that the loan was necessary to protect jobs and growth in the UK. Mr Osborne also has said he wants to ensure British charities are protected from controversial plans to limit tax relief on charitable donations. The Chancellor told the BBC he wanted to deal with the concerns raised about the impact of his proposals, which critics say could deter people from making large donations to charity. The Afghan intelligence agency says it's arrested five Taliban militants who were planning to carry out a huge attack in the capital Kabul a week ago. Officials said two of the men, who were caught with 10 tons of explosives, were members of the Pakistani intelligence agency. Syrian state news is reporting that United Nations observers have visited the city of Homs, the opposition stronghold that's been bombarded by government troops. The UN team is thought to have met the city's governor. This morning, opposition groups said shelling had stopped and tanks had been hidden. The Labour peer, Lord Ashley of Stoke, who was the first deaf MP, has died at the age of 89. He became a leading campaigner for rights for disabled people and pressed for more compensation for children affected by the drug thalidomide. The weather for this afternoon, there'll be a mixture of sunshine and showers across the UK, with the brightest spells in southern England. There'll be more cloud in Northern Ireland, and rain will die away overnight, with a cool start to Sunday. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's 3 minutes past one.
And time to join Lucy Skeeping for the Early Music Show.
Well, there's nothing like a bit of a fanfare, is there, to introduce the show. And that piece by Thomas Wilkes is called Tantara, Rantara, Cries Mars. So perhaps it's a bit warlike too. But don't worry, it's all very friendly today. And to prove it, I'm joined by a lovely couple of wind players, Joan Kimball and Robert Wiemken, the directors of the band we've just heard playing and who we're focusing on all through the programme. They're called Pifaro. Very appropriately too, because that's an old Italian word meaning piper, which is exactly what the band does, using pipes of all shapes and sizes to create the sound of a Renaissance wind band. Pifero is based across the pond in the USA, but by the wonders of modern technology, i.e. the phone line, I talk to them from their base in Philadelphia. I asked them first about the many instruments they play and how they all got together over 25 years ago.
Well, even 25 is not quite as long as we've actually been together. I'm one of the founding members, and we started in 1980. There was a group of five of us who played with the Collegium Musicum at the University of Pennsylvania, which was directed by Marianne Ballard at that time. And we decided we wanted to go off on our own and specialize, primarily at that point in the double reeds. We didn't have any brass players with us. But we really spent about 5 years honing our skills on the double reeds and also playing recorders and crumb horns as well. And then in 1985, we decided to incorporate, and that's when we started our concert series in the Philadelphia area. We have about 3 to 4, sometimes 5, different programs per year. Maybe 2 of those will be just Pifero alone, that we bring in various artists from groups, ensembles from around the United States or from Europe. We've also brought a wonderful vocal ensemble that we've done a good deal of work with, the Capilla Flamenca from Belgium, 4 wonderful male singers who've done some great projects with us. Sometimes we collaborate with local choirs in the city of Philadelphia as well. So it's a great variety that we try to provide in our concert series in the city.
We've kind of modeled ourselves after the wind bands of the late 15th through mid-17th century, and part of their job, I guess it was to play in a variety of situations and requiring a variety of different instruments. So loud instruments for outdoor and large rooms and softer instruments for indoor occasions and smaller chamber music presentations. So we do all play quite a few instruments, though we tend to specialize. And most of the reed players tend to play only reeds. We don't play sackbuts. And the brass players tend to play brass. And then we all play recorders and we have string players. And so we do play quite a few individually.
The ensemble Pifero with Greiner Zanner, a fantasia by Heinrich Finck, based on a lied by his contemporary Heinrich Isaac. Both composers come from the important tradition of the Stadtpfeifer, the wind bands of Renaissance Germany, who performed popular tunes from the balconies high up in the towers of town squares. From earliest times, they would pipe in the hours and keep the town watch, and it wasn't long before almost every city in Europe had its own municipal wind band, Italy, Spain, France, and of course England, where they were known as the Waits. And since this was, if you like, music for the people, heard in market squares, processions and so on, much of the repertoire was based on popular tunes, and in particular on familiar songs or chansons. I asked Bob how this works.
Well, I think that one of the things that we've been trying to do our whole career is, and that is to recognize the fact that Renaissance music is vocal music. And therefore, the challenge for any wind player, especially wind player, but for all instrumentalists, is to reproduce a vocal presentation to the music. And so even though we can't sing the words, we try to play the words. And so we let the words be prescriptive of our phrasing and articulation and breathing and all of that. And in a sense, we try to sing the compositions through our own instruments. And in that way, I think we can convey the sentiment of the text. This is certainly what happened. We know that the wind players drew heavily on the vocal composed repertoire for their own music, as well as, especially in the French literature, as well as for all of the dance music that's published at the time. And there we would take what were probably basically like jazz lead sheets, these simple four-part arrangements of dances that would needed to be fleshed out, needed to be arranged and expanded on, ornamented. And so in the French repertoire, as well as in other repertoires, we've attempted to do that.
Thank you.
the music of a French Renaissance wind band, two settings of the popular chanson Quand on désire, an anonymous four-part version, and before that we heard the slightly more complex six-part arrangement by the Flemish composer Jacques Busse. He worked at St. Mark's Venice during the first half of the 1500s before moving on to the Habsburg court in Vienna, which wasn't all that unusual. In fact, these musicians seem to have done a good deal of travelling, and their music travelled with them, so that the same favourite tunes gradually became known to their counterparts throughout Europe. That's particularly evident when it comes to dance tunes as well. Our next piece is called a brawl, which sounds as if it might have been more of a rough free-for-all rather than a stately dance.
Oh yes, it is a very lively dance. It's oftentimes a circle dance, and as far as we know, and it's certainly the way we've performed it today, the dances get a little bit more lively as you go through, and you play through a number of times, and they get faster and faster, and the dancers get maybe a little bit more lively with their legs and their kicks, and perhaps even kick their neighbor. And we think that the etymology of the English word brawl actually comes from the French word brawl, the dance.
Thank you.
characteristic drone of a hurdy-gurdy there, supporting the recorders, flute, whistle and bagpipes, along with a lute and, of course, drums. A 16th century French dance known as a brawl, which usually began the proceedings at court festivities. Well, as we've heard, the music of the Renaissance wind bands travelled far and wide. And our next example comes from Spain. I often think of this as more of a Western outpost when it comes to style. So I asked Bob and Joan whether Spanish musicians also had access to the popular European repertoire.
There is certainly an international language written and performed by the main composers of the 16th century, especially Morales and Francisco Guerrero and Victoria, all those famous composers' names that we know and have heard many times. And they have learned their tradition from the Flemish, or the interaction between the Flemish, the international connections there. And so it has its connection with the larger world of European music, while at the same time does indeed put its own stamp on it. And especially that's true of the sacred music and the music of the Roman Church in Spain, with a larger perspective of emotionalism and all of the feasts of the Virgin Mary, for instance, and a great deal of music that has inspired from the composers in the 16th, early 17th century.
And if you think of the history of Spain going before 1492, was really a confluence of a variety of cultures, from the Moors, who had important courts there, and the Jews. And so that the influence of music from outside of the normal European music, I think, will also come into play into the Spanish music, and then especially with the rhythmic vitality of the music, which is one reason why we love it so much and return to it quite frequently.
Thank you.
group Pífaro with Pois con tanta grasa by Gaspar Fernández, a Spanish composer of the late 16th and early 17th century. Of course, this must have been an amazing time to be living in Spain with the discovery of the New World and all the wealth that brought. Many composers actually settled over in the Americas and even picked up some of the native styles. I certainly detected more than a touch of what we might now call Latino rhythm in that little piece.
That's right. And our latest project is a sort of Spain in the New World, following composers from Spain into Mexico and Guatemala and Peru and Bolivia and what they wrote there, as well as what they did to inspire indigenous composers who therefore found a kind of amalgam between the music that they discovered when they were there, African influence, Latin American influence, local composed music and folk music, and that amalgam and what they knew from the old world. And it creates some very fascinating material that we can only really guess at, because so little of the pre-existing material is written down. We can only see it through the composer's eyes themselves.
Thank you.
music for wind band from the Iberian Peninsula, a lively and percussive Chaconne by Juan Arañez. And before that, we heard the slightly more sober Dios Itla Conencine by the Portuguese church composer Gaspar Fernandez, who also worked in the settlements in the New World. It's such an infectious sound, isn't it? But it seems that it was actually in the more chilly climes of northern Europe, and the Flemish lands in particular, that the Renaissance wind band first took root.
Well, I think that one of the important things to realize about mid-15th into the 16th century is the prominence of the Flemish composers. And we call this the international style, and this music really did travel throughout Europe to the various courts as these Flemish chapel masters were very, very highly sought after. And chapel masters as well as composers. You think of Josquin des Prez, you think of Obrecht and Isaac and those composers. And so that's, I think, why you see so much of, and you think of so much of Flemish music throughout Europe. Whether the instruments themselves came from the Flemish and the Low Countries, we're not really so sure, because certainly all through Europe you find instruments that survive. But I think that perhaps the Flemish painters in there, the way they like to paint sort of intimate scenes, frequently put in the instruments of the folk as well as the instruments of the courts into their paintings. And so it's a great iconological reference for us when we want to find out a little bit more about what the instruments look like. And they really are rendered in some wonderful detail in many cases.
Joan Kimball, co-director of Pífaro, and we'll hear them now in three dances by Flemish composer Tielemund Suzzato, a stately-sounding Passé e Medio, then a Galliard, and finally a Morisca, led by an ancestor of the oboe, the soprano Schaum, whose reedy tone would certainly have cut through the noise of even the most crowded dance floor.
Thank you.
Dances by Tilman Suzzato, performed by Piffero. I'm Lucy Skeeping, and we're featuring Piffero all through today's programme here on The Early Music Show. One thing I wanted to talk about was the instruments themselves. So few originals have survived, but one fantastic resource for instrument makers is that ill-fated flagship of King Henry VIII, the Mary Rose.
Yeah, there's an instrument that for the longest time we knew the name of, had heard of, and descriptions of it, the Duchesne, but really no surviving originals that one could identify or could specifically put with the name of the instrument until the excavation of the Mary Rose and an instrument that fit the description and is, I think, the first surviving original. And we have now a consort of them three, an alto, a tenor, and a bass, Duchesne, which is a double reed instrument, but it is a double reed instrument that has a cylindrical bore as opposed to a conical bore, like an oboe or like the early shawms and dulcians, and that makes it a little quieter. And so it was often called the still shawm or the quiet shawm as opposed to the louder one.
Two anonymous settings of Gentle Prince, which demonstrate the sound of the Duchesne, an instrument found on the Mary Rose. And I hope the performers, Piffero, won't mind if I describe its tone as buzzy. Well, from the typical sound of Henry VIII's court to the colourful outdoor world of Renaissance Florence. And as Bob Wienkamp explained, Piffero have been exploring the sort of wind music that accompanied the processions and ceremonies in this most fabulous of Italian cities.
That particular project, the Trionfo CD, is located in Florence, and all of the occasions for which these large processions with their floats, as we call them here, the parade floats, as it were, a lot of them carrying musicians that were accompanying either what might be a theatrical picture or a notion, for instance, great pieces, I think, on that CD is Carro della Morte, the cart or the wagon of death. And on that wagon of death, there would be people dressed kind of as skeletons. And then this particular piece was played as a way of reminding people of mortality, I suppose. And just all sorts of perspectives like that. And then the music would suit the occasion. And there might be a group of singers on a float just as well as wind players. And we can see that also in Germany around Maximilian in some of the parades that were held there. And there were some very famous woodcuts that depict the floats with the instrumentalists, and interesting combinations of instruments that we're not really sure would work together. Yeah, nonetheless, it's a picture into a time past.
Miserere mei Deus, secundum mania misericordiam tua.
Caro della Morte, music for the infamous Wagon of Death, heard in procession in Renaissance Florence at the time of the Medici. Pifferò with the voices of the Concord Ensemble. Now, like a number of early music groups today, Pifferò are also interested in looking forward as well as backward for their repertoire, and they've linked up with several modern composers, as Joan Kimball told me.
We've had a number of composers in the past come to say, oh, I'd love to compose something for you, and we said, oh, that would be nice someday. And so we sort of tucked that away in the back of our minds. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, we decided that, well, maybe we should act on that. And we thought that the best kind of, the most interesting kind of project for us would not just be an instrumental piece, but be something that combined voices with instruments. And as part of our concert series over the years, we have frequently done reconstructions, and liturgical reconstructions of masses and of Vesper services. And so we thought that maybe in a very appropriate kind of work to commission would be a Vespers focusing on the 16th century Lutheran tradition and therefore using some of the wonderful chorale tunes as the basis for the compositions. Well, we knew this wonderful composer, Kyle Smith, who is local in Philadelphia, who himself is steeped in the Lutheran tradition, and we asked him if he would compose this work for us, and so he did. And we didn't quite know what to expect. We gave him all the parameters and the various details of our instruments and what they could play and what they could do, and he came back with an absolutely marvelous work that is just that floored us when we started working on it. And it was very, very successful in its premiere in 2008, and we got a special grant to record it soon after that. And actually, we just revived it this year and performed it just in early January of 2012.
Joan Kimball of Pifaro. So let's hear part of that newly composed Vespers now. This is Veni Sancte Spiritus. Veni Sancte Spiritus, the opening movement of Vespers by Kyle Smith, a newly composed work for the Renaissance wind band Pifaro and the vocal group The Crossing. Well, that just about wraps it up for today, but we won't let you leave us on such a sombre note. So much of this early wind music is associated with festivities and dancing and, of course, popular tunes. So we'll end with a track from Pifaro's most recent recording, which was inspired by their own trip to Bolivia and the amazing variety of 17th and 18th century music still in the archives of the old mission churches. This is a traditional villano with a repetitive melody, a catchy refrain, a rhythmic beat and a drone. In fact, everything you'd expect from a good dance tune.
An anonymous villano arranged and performed by Pifaro. And Lucy Skeeping was talking in the programme to the two artistic directors of the ensemble, Joan Kimball and Robert Wiemken. Well, in tomorrow's Early Music Show, Lucy presents a programme looking at some of J.S. Bach's musical ancestors. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news, tomorrow lunchtime, here on BBC Radio 3.
Wagner's Siegfried, live from New York. Part 3 of the Ring Cycle in Opera on 3, live from the Met. J. Hunter Morris sings the title role with Deborah Voigt and Bryn Terfel. Wagner, from the Metropolitan Opera, this afternoon on BBC Radio 3 from 4 o'clock.
And just glancing ahead to Drama on 3 tomorrow, it features Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, starring David Tennant as Malvolio. It's the first of four Shakespeare dramas, which are part of the BBC's Shakespeare Unlocked season. And it'll also be available as a podcast. But before then, you can hear it at 8:30 tomorrow evening. Well, now it's 2 o'clock and time for Saturday Classics, presented this week by the violinist Daniel Hope.
Hello and welcome to the second of my programmes for Saturday Classics, which I'm calling A Fiddler's Tale.
Thank you.
That was me, violinist Daniel Hope, with the Royal Stockholm Philharmonic and conductor Zachary Oramo performing Marc-Olivier Dupin's arrangement of the popular Hungarian Dance No. 1 by Brahms. Last week I focused on some of the music and musicians that have inspired and influenced me. This week I want to tell the story of my violin, the instrument that featured in the recording we've just heard. I'm extremely lucky to have had the wonderful, historic Guarneri del Gesù violin, known as the Ex Lipinski, put at my disposal. It's called Ex Lipinski after the celebrated 19th century Polish virtuoso, who's become indelibly linked with the instrument that he himself used to play. Karol Lipinski was a remarkable fiddler by all accounts, a rival to his contemporary Niccolo Paganini, with whom Lipinski also studied, and according to some might even have excelled in technical wizardry and musicianship. However, a rivalry developed between Lipinski and Paganini, which eventually destroyed their friendship. Thereafter, whenever Paganini was asked who the greatest violinist was, he would say, "I don't know who the greatest is, but Lipinski is certainly the second greatest." Like Paganini, Lipinski also composed. Here is the finale to his violin concerto No. 2, known as The Military.